Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I am Ted Santos, and I am your co-host of The Creative Alchemist. You know us. We talk to you every Thursday evening at 7 p.m. until 8. And we talk about business, you know, the business you run, the business you would love to run, the company you work for. And we talk about many things and revolving around business. We discuss your finances, your company finances, from accounting, leadership. We've talked about corporate culture. We've even talked about your health in these trying times. And tonight, well, we are going to talk about something that may have been affected during these trying times, but it's something that the whole nation is aware of. And as always, we have a very special guest this evening. You're going to be seeing double, in fact. They're coming as a two-pack, our guest tonight. Before we introduce our guest, you know I never fly this journey alone. I have to introduce my co-host, Lori. Let them know you're here.
Hi, everybody. It's Lori Miller, LGC Interior Design. Lots of exciting things, but tonight we're going to talk about divorce and the happily ever after, or sometimes how you can have a peaceful divorce, or how you can find attorneys who will help you be peaceful through the divorce process. So we have Alyssa Gefner and Carolyn Kirsch of Gefner Kirsch, and I'm going to let them introduce themselves. And before I do, if you want to call in and you're having questions, 516-387-1640. And I don't know who's going first, but ladies, you're on.
I'm Alyssa Gefner.
And I'm Carolyn Kirsch. We handle all aspects under the family law and matrimonial umbrella, including prenuptial agreements, divorce, post-judgment and divorce modification matters.
Given our experience, we like to think that we help people into the next chapter of their life. Divorce can definitely be a positive experience, and we are excited to be here. Thank you so much.
Thank you for inviting us.
Oh, our pleasure. So thanks for joining us.
Very excited. So you talk about, you know, it's almost like holding someone's hand through the process, which is so counterintuitive when people think divorce and attorneys. So, and I personally, I will share with the audience that I personally have had the experience working with you that you do indeed do just that. And, you know, if it can be pleasant at all, you do make it pleasant and you make it fun. So do you want to share with our audience how you do that, how your approach is, any of those questions or anything that you want to talk about on that?
I guess, Lori, what I would say is we realize going through a divorce is one of the most, the biggest difficult, challenging things somebody's going to decide and someone's going to go through. And I believe we recognize that.
And it's interesting, you know, sometimes going through a divorce, as much as we're divorce attorneys, there's sometimes I feel like I'm a therapist, I'm a psychologist. Sometimes I think I'm my client's best friend, their mother, their sister, their life coach. You know, what we do is a lot bigger than just divorce and law, because we're helping people move through such a difficult point in their life. And the resources and the things that they need to get there are so expanded, and we're blessed that we're able to help them get there and play that role for them.
Awesome. And I guess your experience, or because you have a lot of awards and you've won, you know, so, or earned, I want to say earned, you didn't win it, you earned it. You guys worked so hard. So if you want to tell, you know, our audience a little bit about some of your accomplishments, that would be great as well, I think.
Well, I think our greatest accomplishment, while we may have many awards on paper and we have degrees and we have a law license, you know, the biggest award that we have is the trust that our clients have in us. And, you know, they have so much trust in us that they refer other people, friends, family members to us, colleagues, and that's what really makes us love what we do. It's not just about what we have on paper. It's about what we can give back to our clients, and that's what makes us, you know, just want to come back every day.
And I'll say, I think we're big nerds. So we study, we love law, we love what we do. We both studied it, and you got to be a little bit of a nerd to get involved in this stuff and to read up on it and to understand what's going on and to be the best you can be. I mean, we do trials, we do negotiations, and it's truly an art, and it's always constantly improving. I always say, when everybody says, how long have you practiced? I said, I don't think I ever stopped practicing.
And from an educational component, we do a lot of lectures and a lot of continuing legal education courses where we lecture to attorneys, and it's amazing.
It's so great.
How long have you ladies been practicing law?
Are you going to ask our age? Is that what's happening?
Come on. Like I was told
no,
not
I mean, you know, a lady, you never asked a lady how long she's been practicing.
Oh, they didn't tell me that one. I lived with a lawyer for a while, for 5 years, but she was in law school when I met her, so I didn't have to ask that.
We're not going to turn the table and ask you questions, but we both graduated Hofstra. I graduated in 03, Carolyn graduated in 02, so we've been practicing almost 20 years.
Very good. And there have been plenty of divorces in 20 years. But I've got to ask you, and I think the world wants to know at least what your sense is. So, you a divorce is a difficult time, but the whole world has been going through a difficult time lately. And the U.S. has been in a lockdown. So some people may have felt like they were in prison with a cellmate, a person called, also known as a spouse. And other people may have gotten closer with their spouse. So what are you seeing? Has COVID caused more divorces? What has it done for your business? What are you all seeing as a result of COVID?
I would say all my clients have gotten time served.
And they're witty, folks.
I think there's two sides to the coin. You know, one side is that I think COVID has been a very trying time for people whose marriages are not on strong foundation, and they were contemplating divorce, and it may have been, unfortunately, the nail in the coffin. It's also such an unusual time because you may have people who are working in Manhattan or career spouses who didn't spend a lot of time in the home because they were busy earning money for their families, and the spouse that was home taking care of the home and the children and their other working spouse, you know, handled that, you know, area. And now when you have people working from home, especially during COVID, which many of us were forced to do, there's been this change and the shifting of tables where the person who was always out of the home is now in the home and wants to insert their opinions and, you know, the way
wow.
that they think things should be handled.
Right.
And it's sort of like a switch of a change of the guard. And it's a problem. And I think it's creating a lot of conflict that previously didn't occur. So even if your marriage wasn't on the rocks, now, you know, you're getting all of this added input. If you're the one who is running the home that maybe wasn't welcomed and it was like, look, this is what I was doing. I was doing it well. You didn't care. You were out of the home. And now you want to tell me how to do things? And that's the problem.
Interesting.
With the successful, you know, the people who are, you know, it was a really good time for people to sort of buckle down and be humble, enjoy family time, get to maybe learn a little bit more about one another when you really didn't get to do that. So there was positives and, you know, negatives or other positives that come in between it. But it was definitely a time for relationships and family and reprioritizing yourself.
Because it really got us all back to what was most important or, you know, what we think is most important and having that ability to be that close with your family. I do have a couple of friends that, you know, maybe weren't completely satisfied. They felt alone. They felt that their spouse was always out of the house. And now being home, they had that opportunity to really connect and see what mattered. And, you know, that reprioritizing things helped. And their marriage is now on solid ground. So we see both sides.
Interesting. Interesting. And I guess for some people, if the marriage was rocky and they had young children who were now at home every day, I'm sure that didn't help.
Yeah, our marriage was a little rocky, Carolyn and I, and we had 5 children at home, and we muddled through virtual school learning and trying to figure out how to do Google Meets and freezing on us every single way. And I think our kids are champs. Like, the kids going through this right now, oh, my God, it's, like, unbelievable.
And all joking aside, obviously, Elisa and I are not married, but we might as well be, you know, where we joke.
You have to point that out.
Well, I just want to set the record straight, you know. But we are. She's my work wife, and I'm hers. But it was a very challenging time, especially for me with my 3 kids, going through the schooling, the virtual schooling. I mean, it was enough to drive you bananas in terms, especially, and then trying to deal with your business. It was very difficult, and it gives you a lot of respect, not that I didn't have it before, but for the teachers and what they do day in and day out. And I was the first one to say I'm not an educator. And as much as I love school and education, you know, that's not where I'm meant to be. I need to be in the courtroom.
Right.
Wow. And for some people, they are learning that their child is a problem child at school, and they're finally learning why.
Quite frankly, Ted, I'd be the problem child at school. I can't regroup for the life of me. I don't know about this whole new math system. That's a whole other podcast. The Common Core is the challenge. I object.
That was me, too. So.
Yes. I was always the problem child as well.
Well, just one more around COVID. So with COVID, the courtrooms were closed. So I assume they must have gotten like a flood of filings, divorce filings, as soon as they opened up.
Yeah, so when we were during COVID, you could only for a very significant period of time file emergency-based applications. And what they determined was emergency-based was very specific. And us as attorneys who believe all our clients suffer emergency issues or need to deal with things and have immediate resolution, they were at a standstill. And it was somewhat difficult for them, and we did have a lot of COVID-related issues regarding parenting time.
So, for example, you would have frontline workers, emergency room doctors, police officers, things of that nature, and the other parent would say that they were so in the front line that they were in danger of giving their children COVID and the other parent, and they didn't want to release the children. And what was so interesting during that time period is the courts were not available. So we had no one to really guide us through that. And a lot of people were engaging in self-help. And we were, you know, we were really in very uncharted waters. Thankfully, once the courts opened, and it took substantial time, and it was a very uncomfortable zone, but we eventually obtained guidance, and the court's positions was basically that unless a parent is COVID positive, you need to turn over the children, which was interesting, and it was very difficult to explain to certain people.
Interesting. So I want to ask you, from what you see, what are the top 2 reasons you see people getting divorced?
I would say, I think number one would be that people get married at younger ages, or at least did in the past, which we're now seeing as divorces, and who they were when they got married is not who they are today. And if you don't change and grow at the same pace and together, you ultimately grow apart, and then you become a mismatch. So, you know, your goals at 25 years old, or, you know, what you want in a mate at 25 is very different than what you want at 35 or 40.
So you either kind of grow together or grow to, it sounds so cliche, like what does that even mean? But I'm sure a lot of your listeners and have experienced this, and it's just, I think normally you need to be in a growth pattern as you move through life. That's important. I always, you know, I sort of have a different view of when somebody says, well, he changed or she changed. And I say, well, aren't we supposed to change? Isn't that human nature?
Right.
Aren't we supposed to evolve? And, being stagnant might not necessarily be what life's about. So people either grow together, grow apart. And then I think, and I said this to you when we were talking about that kind of stuff when we were preparing, it's just you have to be attracted to your spouse. You know, a lot of things people have cheated, and we had that whole Ashley Madison debacle that we actually got business from. Yeah. That really was a true thing. That whole list came out. And, you know, you still have to be attracted and have that way. And there's certain ways in which you can continue to do that. And a perspective. It's all about perspective in life. So I think if you continue to keep a perspective about somebody and who they are, it's important to keep your relationship and your marriage alive and, you know, pick your fight. Who were we talking to the other
I've
day?
I've heard this a lot. This is actually, we were speaking to someone recently, but I've heard it a lot. They say, you know, when you go into marriage, what is your number one top, you know, marriage advice? And I've heard this multiple times. It's don't ever think it's going to be 50-50 because it's not 50-50. Sometimes it's 90-10. Sometimes it's 60-40. Sometimes it's 70-30. Sometimes it's 50-50. 100-0. You know, you're never putting in the same at the same time. You need to know each other's weaknesses and strengths. And you need to play off of those, and you need to monopolize upon them and respect one another.
Okay.
Very much so.
Have you all ever stopped a couple from getting a divorce after talking to them?
I was just going to ask the same question.
Well, I guess, you know, we don't talk to couples together, really. You know, it's one person coming into our office. And, you know, by the time they're coming to see us, there's obviously significant issues that, you know, need to either be resolved between them or not, or unresolved. I know Carolyn has a recent story where she had given her advice about things that I'll table for her. But what I'll say is, when somebody says to me, okay, so I'm coming in and I want to do a trial separation. And what, you know, and I say to them, well, what does that mean, right? Are you trying to separate and not think about your spouse and do your own agenda? That's not necessarily going to work in both of your best interest if you want to stay together. A trial separation really needs to be, how are we going to separate and make this work by couples counseling, date nights, mutually coming together and discussing things, not just erasing one another from their life. And then, you know, we sort of have indications and we discuss, okay, am I really ready? And I know you just had a conversation with somebody about that and your advice.
Well, my advice is when people come in, I don't know how to tell my spouse if I want to get divorced. My question is always, is there something that you could tell them you want or that they could do to fix it? And if the answer is yes, then it's absolutely worth the conversation to say, look, these are my deal breakers. This is what I need. And if you can fulfill that for me, I am in this with you. And I think we could move forward to have a healthy, productive relationship. If there is absolutely nothing this person can say or do, because there's so much water under the bridge, there is no point in having a dialogue about your differences and why you're coming to the table of getting divorced, because all it's going to do is polarize the two of you, especially if you have children. You're going to hate each other more after that conversation. There's nothing to talk about unless there's something that they can do to change. And a lot of times people say no, and the few people that say, well, if he did X, Y, and Z, and in that situation, I refer them to a great marriage counselor, and I say it's worth it to your family, if they're open to it, to have that dialogue to see if you can fix it. But by the time, as Elisa said, by the time they come to us, it's usually just too far gone that there's nothing that can be done, which is sad.
Right.
Very interesting.
So what pointers can you give to a couple who, or to the, you know, to someone who's coming in to you for a divorce? I mean, what would be first steps or second steps or, you know, how do they even find you, or, you know, if they're not in the state and you can't do it out of state, like how do they find, because we have listeners in Australia, we have listeners all over. So how do they even find a good attorney?
I think, you know, research is important, and I, you know, sometimes things are like the best kept secret. People don't necessarily want to share things, but once you do, you find a plethora of resources and people who have been through the same thing, seeking the same thing, who know where to guide you. I would definitely be a little bit more candid, or be candid a little bit with your close people about what's going on and who you might reach out to. I mean, a lot of the people that we represent come from family and friends and come from people who have, you know, been with us and have understood what we're about. And I think talking is very important. Humans need that. Humans need to relate to people. They need to go through problems with people. And as private as you can be, and as private as some of our clients are, it's so nice to hear that somebody else has been thinking that, or has been through that, or knows somebody who can help you. So I start with your resources at home.
Okay.
What does that mean?
So basically, if I were going through a divorce and I wasn't a divorce attorney, you know, and I was flipping the script, I would speak to my friends that maybe went through a divorce, or I'd speak to my friends that have resources and networks, people in finance, people who, you know, trusted advisors, or just even good neighbors and friends that you trust them and you think that they have a good solid head on their shoulders, because they may know good people to put you in touch with. You know, I don't necessarily know a good divorce attorney in Australia, but again, if someone came to me, I probably have a sufficient network, I could locate someone.
And it's always good to, even if you just go in a room with somebody and have a consult and get your questions answered, even if it's not something that's happening today or that you think, but it's something that's really in the back of your mind, that I would suggest doing that.
Because knowledge is power, and I say this to people all the time. People come in, they're super nervous, they're shaking, they have a list of questions or not, and they just don't know what to do. And I say, look, you don't have to do anything, but just knowing the information, knowing what's ahead of you, knowing what you can do to set yourself up better, it's power, and it's clarity, and it's comfort. So just to take those steps, they're worth taking. We have people who come, I have many people that come in, you know, a year, 2 years, just repeatedly. I have multiple intake notes because they just can't pull the trigger, and they need that time and that constant reassurance. And when the time is right for them, they move forward. And I tell people all the time, they'll say, can I just have a little more time? And I said, you can have as much time as you want. I'm going nowhere. But you need to do it when it's right for you, not when it's right for anyone else. And it's difficult.
Right. Now, you made another very good point. You know, like you said, consultations with, you know, different people, and make sure that you're comfortable. And like you said, you know, they want to make sure you're going to be there, and you say yes. But is a consultation something somebody should pay for? Is it something that, you know, they could get, you know, an initial consultation just, you know, to make sure that that comfortability is going to work?
Well, what I have to say with respect to that is, you know, like all professionals, time is money, right? We all have, you know, clients we need to serve, and time is a resource that, you know, we can't freely produce. We only have so many hours in the day. So there are situations where, you know, we do ask people to pay for their consultations, and there are times that they're no charge. And I think it depends upon, you know, the referral source that comes from someone and the person is serious about the consultation. You know, I have no problem doing it in a complimentary manner, and a lot of colleagues do. But what Elise and I do in our office that I think is a really happy medium and, you know, kind of makes everyone feel satisfied is if someone comes in and they do not retain us, they pay for the consultation. And if they retain us, we refund the money to them, and it's ultimately a paid consultation. So what that does is it makes sure that people are not just shopping around and, you know, spending legal time. But at the same time, if you want to move forward, you get the benefit of getting that initial free consultation. So that's what we do in our office, you know, and other colleagues have differing, you know, opinions on that. And I see both sides of it, you know, because if you did free consultations all day, we would never be able to service clients. But that's
what
we do. And we feel very comfortable with it because we think it's just very fair.
Yep. I know a lot of designers work that way as well. You know, it's like they'll go for the consultation and, you know, listen, if you're going to hire us, then it goes towards your fees, you know. I mean, because then, you know, you took us seriously, we took you seriously, and it's a fair way to go about it, and I think that's awesome. I think that's, again, one of the things that makes the two of you so different.
But Laura,
you know,
too.
It's, again,
I mean,
that caring part.
you come in and you impart so much good advice to someone, even on an initial consultation, which is so valuable that they could take somewhere else. So it's only fair that you're compensated for that. And again, if they move forward, then, you know, you comp them for that.
Exactly. That's one of the things that makes you care.
I have somewhat of a strange question. So, you know, you were talking about start at home, right, your network. So what happens when a divorce attorney is getting a divorce? Is it wise for them to handle their own divorce? And have you all ever handled a divorce for a divorce attorney?
Well, it's funny you say that, Ted. Callan and I are both divorced. And I had the best divorce attorney one could buy.
Me too.
So, yeah, we're both actually divorced. And we both handled each other's divorces, actually. So, we bring a lot of perspective to the people we service because of what we've been through. I mean, not that we didn't beforehand. We do. Relatable. We both have young children. We have 5 of them, ranging from 8 to 11. And we both got divorced when our children were young, between the ages of 3 and 8 or 9. And, you know, we knew what our priorities were because we go through all this. We knew what had to happen. We both actually handled each other's divorces, and we did it somewhat seamlessly, not that we're showing off here.
No, but again, I mean, and I say it tongue in cheek, but, you know, as a divorce attorney, if I can amicably settle my own divorce or Elisa, then, you know, we should probably quit our day jobs, right? Because to have that perspective and to know when to hold them and when to fold them, it means a lot. But even going through that, going through your own divorce, it gives you that perspective to see where our clients come from when sometimes they can't make those reasoned business decisions because it is so personal. Going through our own divorces, we both felt that too, but having one another by our side to, you know, make it real and say, you know, this is not where we're drawing the line, it meant a lot, and we went through that, and that's why it is so relatable.
And it's nice when our clients say this or that, and we can actually say, look, I've been there. I'm there. I deal
right,
with it.
Right.
This is what I deal with. I get it because, you know, it's not just about going through the divorce. It's post-divorce life, right? We have
children
together. They're very young. And even if they're not so young, you have weddings, you have funerals, you have everything that goes into creating a family. And this is something that we have to be very mindful of, and we are for our clients too. It's very important to have that perspective.
And what I've learned is when you say I do, you know, for good and bad, so death do us part. Even though you're divorced, those vows still stand, especially if you have children, because you are still married even though you're divorced. You still have this family you have to support, and if possible, and it's not always possible, but if it is possible to have that working relationship with your ex-spouse, it's invaluable for the children, not for us, because we're all adults. We'll move on.
Right.
But if we have that option, and not again, not everyone does. It's not always possible because of personalities
right.
and, you know, mental issues and substance abuse and just other things. But if it is possible, it's always, you know, a preference.
The best.
Is it a good idea for a divorce attorney to handle their own divorce? I mean, it's an emotional activity, right? So it's an emotional occurrence in your life.
He who represents himself has a fool for a client. So I would never represent myself in a divorce. And even in my divorce, while I was intricately involved and I have a wonderful friendship with my ex-husband, I'm pleased to say, I could not have done that without Elisa. And I made sure he had an attorney. It's just, it's too emotional. So no, I do not think a divorce attorney should represent themselves in a divorce, but should they have a trusted colleague, friend, someone of that nature handled on their behalf? Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Good. So what are the strangest or the oddest or funniest divorces, without revealing names, what are some of the oddest divorces you've been witness to?
So I guess for me, I have two that are most memorable. One that has probably been a very sticking point for me in my career that I've almost internalized perhaps was I was a very young attorney and there was this couple and we had a four-way settlement conference, which means it was the wife's attorney and her, the husband and his attorney, which at the time was me, and we were trying to settle their case in a conference room, and the husband and wife were sitting very close next to each other. My client had his arm around his soon-to-be ex-wife. Her hand was in his lap. You know,
Oh my God.
Was wiping her tears. And they almost seemed like the perfect couple. And we settled the case. And when they left and we parted, I said to him, I said, I have to ask you just because I can't help it. Why are you getting divorced? I don't understand. You seem like the most beautiful couple. And his answer to me was, she nagged me to death. And I, as much as I love her and I love our kids, I just couldn't live the rest of my days that way. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was very poignant. And like I said, it stuck with me. It shaped me because, you know, I'm not going to, mm-hmm. not to be stereotypical, but any type A person could probably nag their spouse, you know, if they're less motivated than them to, you know, do things in their way. And
right.
that was just crazy to me that as much as they loved each other and as great as they were, it just wasn't even enough. And I find,
right.
I guess, some of, you know, the things that I might question a little bit is the people who are much, much older who are getting divorced, and that's happening, you know, and we're talking like 80s, in their 80s, and to even decide to go through that at that point in time seems just so against what one would think, you know, that you're at that point in time, but it does happen, and I think it's for the same exact reasons, just people want to maybe end or, you know, go to the remainder of their life in some peace that they might have been thinking about for a long period of time. You know, it's different. We have a lot of people who've been together since they're very young and together for years and years and years, and they finally decide to take that next step and that next journey on their life, and it's difficult because there's so much history and complexity and feelings that go into that. So that's also another thing that affects us. And then just personality dynamics, that you see a lot of different personality dynamics with respect to couples who are, you know, moving on to their next chapter in relationship, and there's certainly a lot of similarities in things that we see.
Okay.
Interesting. I recently heard something that I don't know if it's true, so maybe we can clear up that rumor if it is or isn't. So someone is recently considering a divorce, and the advice someone gave them was speak to every divorce attorney because it will make it very hard for your husband to find one.
Yeah,
because they're not allowed, because once you consult, they're already involved in the case. So they can't take the, I guess, the soon-to-be ex-spouse's case.
Well, I mean, Carolyn,
that was part
of what Carolyn was saying about charging for consultations, because that's true in some sense, is that if you consult with an attorney, they're technically conflicted out of representing your spouse.
Oh.
So there's, you know, certain people that you think you would want to conflict out, you could do that as a tactic. It's certainly a tactic.
Interesting.
And again, in terms of the consultations, that's why, you know, we as professionals who, you know, especially Elisa and I, and I'm sure some of our colleagues who really love what we do and care about what we do and put so much into it, and in a consultation to do them day in and day out without compensation and some type of commitment, you know, you'd be out of business, and it's quite frankly not fair. So again, it's a strategy, but what I'd have to say is that there's no way you're going to conflict out every attorney. You know, everyone needs representation,
right,
for better or for worse. So, you know, if that's your concern and there's one attorney that you say, oh, I really don't want him or her to have that attorney, I guess it could be a strategy. But at the same time, there may be someone else that person has never heard of that's even worse. So
right.
I do find that like finds like. You know, you find similar
right.
people in your life. That's just the way the world works usually. So, you know,
right.
if your spouse is a really bad person, and they're going to find somebody. There's always people.
Right. Yeah, it was just interesting. I was like, how could that even be possible? Like, that's horrible. But, I guess it makes sense. Because I guess you're already biased.
Is that just for an attorney or the whole firm?
It's the whole firm, because the problem is that if I have a consultation with you, Ted, right, and you tell me all this information and it's in my database, and Elise is my business partner, and you're for Lori, right, and then Lori consults with Elisa, it's a complete conflict. There's no way to shield other members of a firm in that matter, and it actually could even go further if you have, you know, younger associates that flip between firms. It could become more complex. That's why
there are situations, though, where you can, like, a person can consent to that conflict, right? So you
mm-hmm.
could say, okay, I know I consulted with Carolyn, but I am comfortable with Elisa, and I will waive that conflict. I mean, that can happen. It's a waivable conflict.
Okay.
Okay.
Interesting. Didn't know about that. So you ladies said you handled you said you handle prenuptial agreements. So let's sort of talk about the other side. So because you've been doing divorce for so long, you've seen lots of disasters. So let's talk about how to prevent those disasters in the event of a divorce. So, you know, the preemptive action. So what are the things someone can do to mitigate getting hit hard financially, especially if you're a successful business owner or you have certain assets? Just quick story. Someone told me about a guy who inherited a 6-bedroom home. It was a good size home from his parents. And they died and he inherited the home. Well, that guy marries a woman and they get a divorce and she takes the home. That seems impossible, but it happens. So, you know, situations like that, like, so prenuptial agreements, if you have a business, like, what, let's talk about that. How do you protect yourself going in?
So, I know you have a lot of business owner listeners, and the specific thing you're commenting on, I have a bunch of reasons why that might have happened, which are very technical as to the law. And it depends in what jurisdiction you're in. And of course, you can only speak from New York law. But I find that prenuptial agreements are important, especially when you have assets coming into the marriage, a business interest coming into the marriage, children from a prior marriage, second marriages, things of that nature. What it can do is, while in New York, at least, anything you own prior to marriage is your separate property, there are certain exceptions to that rule. And you have to be mindful of those exceptions and understand and be educated. I always say hindsight is 20/20. And there's a lot of things that people don't realize they're converting and putting into a marital estate that a prenuptial agreement would deal with. So with respect to a business specifically, if you have a business and that's something that you work at day in and day out, and during your marriage, that the business increases in value, that increase could potentially be marital. So we have a lot of business owners who seek, when they're getting married, to protect that interest and come up with some compromise now for the other spouse, waiving any interest. Because once, if you have a business, you're getting involved in forensics and people looking into all of your accounts and your valuation that you want to try to avoid if you can. So it's very important in those specific categories, like I said, people who come in with assets, people who have businesses, people who have children of a first marriage, that they need to be mindful of, to at least sit with a divorce attorney, somebody who does prenuptial agreements, and tell whether and discuss whether this is something that would be helpful to you to get into. And we always say with insurance, as I say, you know, to know a matrimonial attorney, it's an insurance policy, you'll never need one. But it's the same thing with the prenuptial agreement. If you have a prenuptial agreement, hopefully you never need it. You should take that next step. With respect to businesses,
you know, the last thing anyone wants to do, or at least as a matrimonial attorney, knowing what it involves, is go through a business valuation. So if you own a business and you're getting married, it would just be intuitive to me that you'd want to get a prenuptial agreement to secure that, because, you know, even if people want to consider mediation or things of that nature, what makes a divorce complicated or simple? A business and a valuation component to that, which could take months and tons of discovery, that's what makes it complicated, besides the custody issue. So if you could take that out of the equation and secure yourself as a business owner, and us who we put, you know, our blood, sweat, and tears into it, it's an asset to be distributed. So if you don't want that to be distributed, you need to take care of it. But I would also caution people that they should do one sooner that rather than later. I know it's a very difficult conversation to have, but it's even more difficult 3 weeks before a wedding. So if that, you know, if you're doing that and you're popping the question and, you know, get that over with. Nobody wants to deal with that leading up to their wedding. I know, unfortunately, that happens a lot, but especially with business valuations and things, there are some negotiation that has to happen. So make that just part of the beginning of the process. And, you know, and it's very uncomfortable, and it's something that people, and that's why people put it off, right? But it's even more uncomfortable on the heels of a wedding. So if that's your intention and you want your spouse to have a prenuptial agreement and you want that in place, and a lot of times there's family members that are involved, you need to do that sooner rather than later, because it just puts unnecessary stress on everyone. And it could also be a basis to set aside a prenuptial agreement if it's on the heels of it and it's not fair. So you just want to deal with it. And you know what? We haven't seen many, but a few marriages have not gone forward because of a prenuptial agreement. If that's going to happen, you're better off knowing sooner rather than later. Because, you know, you have deposits with catering facilities and the like, and it just becomes more complicated.
Yep.
So,
and then you find out what the person's really like and where your priorities are different.
Absolutely.
Right. So what happens when, and I think it's typically what has happened, is the woman said, well, I signed under duress. If I didn't sign it, he was never going to marry me. So I didn't really want to sign it.
So,
and then,
you know,
can
a
the
lot
judge
of the,
throw it out?
Well, that's a, you know, it's not, it's a totality of circumstances. We can't, you know, the way it would work is that they sign the prenup and then they're going through a divorce. And a lot of times these agreements are tried to be set aside, even for valid reasons or not valid reasons, if they don't want the prenup to stand. And then you would go through a trial just to see, and it would be a whole host of factors. Was this person represented? Was it fair? Was it truly duress? What was this one thing? There's so much that goes into that. There's certain jurisdictions that are more lenient, more that are more stringent. It's not that easy to say that would be a claim. Whether it succeeds is dependent upon a lot of things.
And again, not to be general, but I would say generally, it's hard to set aside a prenuptial agreement or any agreement for that matter. But it does. You have to look at the totality of the circumstances, but I would say it's more the exception, not the rule. But it depends if it's fair. And was it bargained for? Was there reasonable consideration? Meaning, you know, did each party give up? You know, if you have a young couple, first-time marriage, no kids, and, you know, the wife, for example, is going to be the stay-at-home mom and have 4 kids and not work, and she waived maintenance and council fees and any money, that it's probably going to be set aside. It needs to be fair. And
okay.
A good attorney is going to
all
tell
right.
you that, you know, and we see with prenuptial agreements, we see a lot of people not in the matrimonial field trying to draft them. You know, and not saying that they're all not good at what they do, but a lot of them, they just don't know this field. And they probably shouldn't dabble in them. I just had one just the other day, a client a couple of years ago paid very good money for a prenuptial agreement, and it was missing some just basic terms that were required for it to be valid. And it's causing a huge problem for this person now.
So should a prenuptial agreement spell out, like within the agreement, that I'm not signing this under duress, like this is voluntary?
Of course, and there's a lot of other things you could put in, but that alone, without certain other things, could still make it fail.
So if you're signing just a document, and yeah, you know, like, and if you're saying you don't know what you're signing, you don't have advice, and it's unfair, even if it says that you did all of those things, it might not stand, you know? It's a helpful permission, really? But it's not indicative of upholding it.
Yeah. Wow. Interesting. So it is important matrimonial attorney draws up the prenup then. Okay.
People think that they could just get this document and it's easy, but it's like settling a divorce before a divorce. It's complex. It's not so simple. It's not like you're just signing an invoice for a, you know, new widget. Like, there's complexity. People don't even realize what's involved, the choices, what waivers are happening, what things need to be discussed, if there are significant waivers of things between people. I mean, the matrimonial contract is one of the most highest regarded contracts in our tribunal. It's not just two business people who are doing it at arm's length transaction. You both have fiduciary duties to each other. And it goes to a higher standard. And therefore, it's not so simple. And if somebody makes it simple, that might be question for concern, right? Think about it. If it was that simple to resolve a divorce, everybody would do it.
Okay.
Right.
All right.
And people who call, I can get a $350 divorce, go for it. Because that, filing fees will be more than that.
Yeah. So it depends on your issues, obviously.
So I have another strange question. So, and maybe there's two parts to it. So let's suppose, you know, I have a business, it's doing well, it's doing more than $50 million. I have a partner who's 50-50 on it. And, I get married, and I pass away, like, while I'm still, you know, fairly young. And so my wife, does she automatically inherit my business, my 50%? Is my business partner now, you know, stuck with my wife, who may be very intelligent, but she just may not be appropriate to be a business partner in that? So, you know, my business partner may not want her as a partner. So, you know, is that something you deal with, or am I just way off the sort of reservation here?
No, I mean, interesting to bring that up. We, you know, as you know, we have a podcast, Divorce and Happily Ever After, and we had a insurance colleague that we know. That's actually very much in the estate insurance field, and that's why it's important to have buy-sell agreements, insurance policies for your business owner, because you are correct in the sense, Ted, that as far as I know, and, you know, I'm just not necessarily my realm, but once you pass away, you're spouse, provided you don't have the appropriate safeguards in place, would inherit that one half of that business. You get
right.
Your life to share if you don't have anything in place. You can't disinherit your spouse. But if you have a will or whatever.
No, but I'm just saying, imagine like we had that question. It's actually a question we had. If your spouse is not one that could run your law firm or run Ted's practice, what happens?
Yeah, and we did
right.
Discuss this on our podcast.
We did.
But that's why, like Elisa said, the buy-sell agreements are so important.
Business insurance, life insurance, so that the estate can buy out the interest.
So insurance would have. So okay, so you have an insurance policy that
has. You have an insurance policy and a buy-sell agreement, and both those things should be able to handle your death and what happens with your business.
Okay. All right. Now, let's say I'm healthier than the bull. And I get a divorce instead of dying, and I didn't have a prenuptial agreement.
Are you saying
my
you're
wife,
the bull that ran into the china shop?
No, I'm the example for the bull. You know, everyone says I'm strong as a bull. The bull is trying to be as strong as me. I'm the example for the bull, so that's who I am. So let's say I get a divorce. Same business is. My wife, like, how does that work? Does my wife now become an equity partner? So now my 50% becomes 25%?
No.
What happens is
exactly what we were saying is your business would be valued, and there would be a number attributed there too. You would be 50% of that. So let's say your business was valued at $1 million. Your share would be $500,000.
there would be a negotiation or a court which would say what your wife is entitled to of that share, and it would be offset of different assets or paid out to her. So if they determine that she would be entitled to 25% of that value, you owe her $250,000. She doesn't come into your business. You either pay her a distribution out of the business over a course of time with interest, or you offset it against another asset like the house if she retains the house, or any other kind of liquidity that you would have to buy her out of the share she's entitled to do one half.
Or I could do an earn out, right? So I could do it over 5 years if I wanted, right?
Well, everything's a negotiation, right? It's not what you want, it's what you both negotiate, and, you know, if there's security interest or, you know.
And then you have interest on that money if you're paying it out over time.
Right, right.
Okay, but, yeah.
Right.
So those are the moving parts that we deal with all the time in business valuations and business negotiations. Whether you're 100%, 50%, 25% owner of anything, your non-titled spouse would be entitled to a piece that would either be paid out by you with interest, offset with another asset you have in your marital estate.
Right, right. No, well, I said earn out over 5 years because if the capital's there, maybe we've already allocated it and she'd be, you know, crowding out capital, so that'd be competing for resources. So maybe it depends. I'd have to sit down with the CPA and see what numbers work best. So if I'm paying interest to her, or do I borrow from a bank or an investor? So.
Correct. Okay. And a lot of times we see a lot of offsets with the house versus businesses. That happens a lot. You have a lot of equity in a home, and, you know, so that could potentially be a place in which people offset in divorce distribution.
Okay. So can we talk about a celebrity divorce, one that, you know, I didn't do a lot of reading about it, but it seems more went on behind closed doors than the media has promoted, and that's Bill Gates, Bill and Melinda Gates. He must have had some real protections in place, or do you know?
I mean, you know, we talk about celebrity divorces. We do a decent amount of them as well. I find that people with that kind of estate do not really fight as much over what they have. They're all pretty much set. The question becomes with people like that is how they are leaving their estate, not necessarily what's happening to them now. So it's somewhat easier to deal with. The structures are certainly complex, like business mergers and buyouts. I think Bill and them, they were separated for a while. I don't know if I'm getting that confused with Jeff Bezos, but there are certainly protections in place. Both are protected. I think, though, they're both were in it from the beginning. They have so much money to go around. She's being taken care of. He's being taken care of. The business is not something that is ever going to live its life during their lifetime. So they will just have to probably deal with trust, estates, their children, their grandchildren, their great-grandchildren, and that's probably more of their focus because their immediate lifetime needs are probably very much taken care of.
Okay, and she still works for the foundation.
Yeah, so you know, I think that they're definitely intermingled.
Yeah, they're working together.
Yeah, they're, you know, when you have a family dynamic like that with such complex interests, it's not, I think that the individuals want to go on and live different lives, but their finances would kind of have already been taken care of for themselves, if it makes any sense. Nobody's looking to take more than they have, I don't think. And then there are people who want to separate. As long as I think she, and I don't know her, I'm just saying, can have whatever she needs to have control of versus him, that's enough because they have their family and they're never going to be able to deal with the money they have in their lifetime. So I think it's probably more of a estate planning issue and making sure that they have the assets they allocate to each other to live their life comfortably without control of the other one.
Well, no, if you had $20 billion, you could buy a couple of countries. You could spend that money.
Right. Or buy islands, but yeah.
You could buy a couple of countries, which includes diamonds. So you.
Right. And maybe we should go, like, you know, I think they're now going into outer space, right? We could figure that out. Maybe we could buy a planet.
Exactly.
Maybe you all haven't heard it. There was a guy, I read this maybe 15 years ago. He was selling plots of land on the moon. He sold titles.
But I don't think he really was, he didn't really have the ability to do that, though, right?
No, he made $1 million selling deeds online to the moon.
Was that fraud or was that happening?
I read that he made a living. The guy made $1 million or more selling deeds to land on the moon. He broke it up into plot sizes.
I think Callum and I are going to go to Venus. We'll try to sell land on Venus and I can figure out women for the first time in their life.
Pretty awesome. So you mentioned a few times your, I guess, podcast or radio show. You want to, since we have a little bit of time left, you want to talk about the radio show and how people can hear it and what you do? Because you have very good information on it.
Yeah, you know, so Carolyn and I have been doing this for so many years, and you guys just got a glimpse of all the things we kind of have in our treasure trove of human nature, relationships, living in people's bedrooms, watching people transform, growth, and all of that. And we really wanted to just let people know what we're about. And we have this now radio show that's on 1100 AM, and it's also on 104.7. It's all affiliated with KJOY and WHBI, and it's called Divorced and Happily Ever After. And it provides our insights and experts. And Lori, you were amazing on that show because, of course, with all your interior design expertise, really you're changing someone from the inside out. And dealing with the inside, dealing with your outside sometimes helps your inside. So we had
you on to
talk about that, and that was, you know, very helpful to our listeners about that. But really, that's what it is. It's making people understand divorce is not necessarily negative. It is it's a conscious choice to change and reinvent or make things that you believe a reality. And we give it a comfort level. It's hard to talk about divorce. We know that. We live it. When we say we're divorce attorneys, we get, you know, all sorts of weird eyes. I mean, Ted, I know you wouldn't give us weird eyes. And so it's just something that we want people to understand is not just okay. It is a success to make that decision for yourself and go through it. And that's what we bring to people week after week and make them understand and give them tools and comfort level on making that decision, the transition.
And sometimes it helps you to become an even better person. The people that walk into our office, you know, the people that leave are even better. And
I always say that I feel like I'm like a plastic surgeon. Like if you could see what our client looks like coming into our office the first day, being nervous, not making the change, not making, pulling the trigger, as they call it, to what they are months, years later, it's unreal.
Interesting.
And how do people get a hold of you?
So you could reach us on our website, which is GeffnerKirsch.com. We also have a website for HappilyEverAfter.com. And
it's DivorceAndHappilyEverAfter.com.
Right. And we're located in Garden City in Melville on Long Island. We represent people all over Manhattan, Westchester, and Long Island.
And our phone number is 516-268-9898.
And when does your, maybe you said it, your radio show, when does it come on again?
So it's on Saturdays, every Saturday at 8 o'clock and 11 o'clock a.m. And it's on 1100 a.m. And it's also on 104.7, I believe. But it has to get back to them. Lori can publish it, but it's through KJOY, Conscious Storm
KJOY.
Media.
Okay.
But you could also see it on Apple Podcasts. If you go onto your Apple cell phone and you type in divorce and happily ever after, and you'll see Geffner Kirsch, and that's us. So you can see all our episodes straight from your Apple iPhone.
Perfect.
So perfectly awesome. Thank you so much for giving us your Thursday evening.
Thank you,
Ted and Lori.
Yeah, thank you. Very educational. Thank you for being so open about everything. So really appreciate your time.
It's good you only have 10 seconds left or I would have given you my favorite divorce joke. Just kidding. That's on the After Hours Ted and Lori show.
We'll hold that next.
Good enough.
Thank you
Have a great
so
evening,
much
everyone.
For being great guests. Have a great evening.
Bye. You too. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.